All right, it's a pleasure to welcome Rabbi Adler back for another talk on this time on Hanukkah. I think some of the Rav's Torah on Hanukkah, the candles of the Mikdash. Rabbi Adler needs really no introduction, I think, to our group, but been a prominent Rav in Israel for many years. Today, he's the Rabbi in Ohel Nechama. I served as Rabbi in Ramot for many years, the founding Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshivat Ner Tamid in Chashmonaim, and he served, of course, as the Shamus of Rav Soloveitchik, and I was very happy to hear when I was in conversation now, and please God, we will have another talk with him. He's launching a book, is coming out in the next month or so, about his interactions with Rav Soloveitchik, but that will wait for another time, and now we look forward to your shiur on Hanukkah. Bakasha, Rabbi.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Kelman. Erev Tov from Yerushalayim. And good afternoon, Tzaraim Tovim, to those in the Eastern Seaboard. Yes, Hanukkah is not an independent idea. It is linked and integrally to the idea of Beit HaMikdash. And we should not think necessarily in terms of the menorah. We know that in Beit HaMikdash there was a menorah, and the Hanukkah menorah is not exactly a replica of the Beit HaMikdash menorah. For in the Beit HaMikdash, the menorah had seven rungs, and in our Hanukkah menorah, as you know, has eight, because we're lighting 8 days. The Chazal, our Chachamim, never taught us that we have to have a menorah. They talked about candles, and the original idea was one candle per day, and then it was upgraded, Mahadrin, Mina Mahadrin, and this became a focus of discussion between Ashkenazim and Sfaradim, how to do the upgrade. At least most Ashkenazim, the upgrade is that we take the members of the family in consideration, and we also take the day of Hanukkah into consideration, and that's how Ashkenazim generally fulfilled the mitzvah. Judaica art throughout the years introduced a menorah to give some form to the candles. But I can tell you that when our Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik was in New York City in the weekdays during Hanukkah, and he would light thick Shabbos candles every single night, because he believed that the concept of the half an hour was simply an estimation in the days of the Rambam in Cairo in the 12th century, that about a half hour after sundown, nobody was on the streets any longer. And this is what Chachamim meant, was achitich leregel min hashuk, until people came home from the marketplace. And the Rav said that in New York City, rush hour is from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m., and therefore he thought that the candle should burn at least for 2 hours. So the very, very popular skinny colored candles would not suffice, and he would use thick Shabbos candles that would give him 2 to 3 hours of light. But we didn't have a menorah for that. I remember my brother telling me, when he was the Shamus the year before me, take a piece of silver foil and just schmaltz in those candles, and that's how the Rav was going to light. So he didn't have a menorah. There's no halacha of a menorah, but it's just hidur. It's just adorning the mitzvah. And of course, you can go to any museum of Judaica and see so many different variations of the idea of the menorah. But the connection between Hanukkah and Beit HaMikdash, as I said, is an integral connection. On one occasion, the Rav was very daring and suggested that the whole mitzvah of lighting Hanukkah candles did not enter into the picture immediately after the victory of the Chashmonaim against the Greeks at the time. Well, the Gemara tells us of the story of the Nes Pak Shemen, the miracle of the oil. And there the Gemara tells us, L'shana acheret, in a subsequent year, kav'um va'asa'um yamim tovim b'halel v'hodaya. Chachamim established the day of the 25th of Kislev, where that whole story of the oil took place, began for 8 day duration. Subsequent year, the Yom Tov was established to say Halel and expressions of thanksgiving. Rashi says that's a reference to Alanisim that we include in the Shmoneh Esrei and in the Birkat HaMazon. But it doesn't say there, L'shana Acheret, Kav'um V'asa'um Yamim Shel Hadlakat Nerot. Does not say there in the Gemara that we light candles. Yet, all the discussions in Masechet Shabbat, where the Hanukkah issue is discussed, we're talking about lighting candles. But it does not seem to be a direct result of the victory. Now, we know that the Hanukkah story takes place approximately 200 years before the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash. And the Rav posited and said, you know, we have this big dispute between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, whether we begin lighting one candle and work our way up to eight, that's Beit Hillel, that's exactly what we do, or do we begin with eight candles and we work our way down to one candle? The difference between Mosif V'Holech and Pochet V'Holech, the two very, very diametrically opposite points of view. And each one carries with it ideas that the Gemara talks about. Now, the Rav said, one second, Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, that's the period of Yavna. That's Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. That's Rabbi Yeshua. That's Rabbi Elazar HaGadol. We're talking about an era of 200 years after Hanukkah. And now they're kicking around the discussion as to whether we light from 1 to 8 or 8 to 1. Why couldn't somebody just ask his grandfather, how did you light candles? Why didn't they do that? And simply end the entire discussion, if not for the fact, suggested the Rav, that the grandfathers didn't light Hanukkah candles yet. They had a Yom Tov of Hanukkah. The Yom Tov of Hanukkah expressed itself by being a period of 8 days where it was forbidden to fast and forbidden to say eulogies. That is a statement found in a second Beit HaMikdash document, Megillat Ta'anit, not to be confused with the Mishnah Masechet Ta'anit. And there it says, the Gemara quotes it in its Eretz Yisrael, Palestinian Aramaic, that's what it's called, Palestinian Aramaic, the Aramit Eretz Yisraelit. It says in the 25th of Kislev, Delo lemispad bahon velo litanot bahon. No hespedim, no eulogies, and no fasting. That's all what was discussed over there, and that's what made Hanukkah special. And the Gemara comes and says, we have to say Hallel, and we have to add expressions of thanksgiving, which is interpreted as the inclusions of the Alanisim in the Davening Shmoneh Esrei and in the Birkat HaMazon. Not a word about lighting candles. And here you have, 200 years later, the Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel are discussing what's the best way to light candles. 1 to 8 or 8 to 1. It's somewhat of an indication that perhaps several generations before, while the Beit HaMikdash still stood with an independent Jewish state after the Hashmonaim victory, they weren't lighting candles yet as a formal mitzvah. That's point number one. And then the Rav takes a text. Because without a text and without a Rambam text, you can't get to first base. You can't move. And the Rambam actually says, after he discusses the history, and then he discusses the miracle, and he spends two paragraphs dealing with each one individually. And in his third paragraph of the laws of Hanukkah, he says, I'm reading from one of the source pages that's entitled Neirot Hanukkah Lanetzach, but you'll be able to work with it even if you don't have it. Umipnei ze, for these reasons, hitkinu chachamim sheboto hador, the chachamim of that generation, declared or instituted, sheyush monata yamim elu, there will be 8 successive days, shetrilatan milil chamisha ve'slim bekislev, that begin on the 25th of Kislev, yemei simcha v'halel, days of joy and halel, umadlikin bahen hanerot ba'erev, and we were to light candles in the evening. Well, what I just read now seems to contradict everything I just said a moment ago, that the institution of lighting candles in the evenings of Hanukkah was not part of the original institution. And here, a simple reading of the text seems to indicate, when he says there's a 25th of Kislev is a Yom Tov, Yemei Simcha V'Halel, Umadlikim Bahen Hanirot Ba'erev, Al Pitrei HaBatim B'chol Laila V'Laila, and we are to light candles by the doorway each night for the successive 8 nights, Laharot U'Lagalot HaNes, so that we should publicize the miracle. That's what it seems to be. The Rav does something very, very uncharacteristic. Very uncharacteristic. He cites one of the Achronim. The Achronim are the great, the Torah giants of the last 500 years. If you take, let's say, the 16th century, because we talk about the Middle Ages, they are the Rishonim. So from, let's say, the 9th, 10th century until the 16th century, they're the Rishonim, Rashi, Rambam, Ramban, Rashba, and so on. But then you get to that somehow point of demarcation, and you have Rabbi Yosef Karo there, and you have Rabbi Moshe Isserles, and it's a speech in itself to try to figure out exactly where is that point of demarcation between the Rishonim and Achronim. I had a great professor at the Bar Ilan University, Rav Shlomo Zalman Havlin, who suggested it was the invention of the printing press. The moment we went to print, the entire way of study of Torah Shebaal Peh, the oral law, shifted, and it became a different type of study. And from that point on, we're now the Achronim. So we take in the period of the Achronim, just 150 years ago, you have one of the greats. He was known by his sefer, the Avnei Nezer. It was the first and only time in all my experiences in learning in the Rav Shir that he quotes the Avnei Nezer. He was the Sochach of a Rav. The Sochach of a Rav, if it means anything to you, but the Sochach of a Rav had a great grandson who is a great Rosh Hashiva in Eretz Yisrael, Rabbi Shabtai Rappaport, who happens to be the son-in-law of Rabbi Moshe Tendler. And Rav Rappaport used to teach in Gush in the Yeshiva Har Etzion, became a Rosh Hashiva in his own right, became the head of the Beit Midrash in the Bar Ilan University. Big, big Talmud Chacham, a genius. And his great-grandfather was the Sochach Ava. And in the Avnei Nezer, he says, and the Rav liked this, he liked this very much, that the Rambam has to be read with a pause. The Rambam reads as follows, according to the Avnei Nezer. U'mibnezeh hitkinu chachamim shaboto ador, and because of these reasons, chachamim instituted in that generation, shiyu shmonat hayamim ha'elu shetchilatan milel chamisha ve'esrim bekislev, that for 8 successive nights, beginning with the 25th of Kislev, yemei simcha v'halel, days of joy and halel. Pause. And furthermore, something else happened. Umadlikim bahem hanerot ba'erev. Candles were to be lit in the evening. But umadlikim bahem hanerot is not a conjunction and, because the Sochach Ava said that the Rambam should have written, yemei simcha v'halel, shemadlikim bahem hanerot ba'erev, that in those days, these 8 days that are days of halel and simcha, these are days on which we light the candles in the evening. That would suggest that the lighting of the candles, the 8 successive nights, it came into being hand in hand with the very institution of the Yom Tov of Chanukah. But the Avnei Nezer felt that the institution of the formal mitzvah, rabbinic mitzvah, of lighting Hanukkah candles came into being somewhat later in history, and it came into being at the time of the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash as a Zecher LeMikdash, to remember Beit HaMikdash. This was the Sochach Ava, this was the Avnei Nezer. And the Rav liked this very much, whether he was absolutely convinced that this is what the Rambam was saying or not is of no consequence. Because the Rav used this as a springboard to try to develop the idea that our lighting of the candles is very much so a continuation of that which took place in the Beit HaMikdash with the lighting of candles on a day-to-day basis. And what brings him to this, he starts with a marshaling sources from all over the place. He brings about 6 or 7, 8 different sources to this effect, to show that there is a connection. Now, I'm just going to point out that on the whole issue of Zecher LeMikdash, remembering Beit HaMikdash, in a completely different context, Rav Soloveitchik taught that there are 2 different issues. They're found in 2 different places in the Shas. One is in Baba Batra, Daf Samach, where the Gemara talks about Im Eshkachech Yerushalayim Tishkach Yemini. And it says that these are things that we should change our normal habit, normal way of doing things, and downgrade smachot, joyous occasions, so we should remember Beit HaMikdash. And the Gemara says, you know what, after the destruction of Beit HaMikdash, we should all stop eating meat, because the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, and they're no longer korbanot, no longer sacrifices. And the Gemara says, you know what? We should stop drinking wine because we do not have the nesech, the pouring, the wine libation. And you know what? We should stop eating grain. You know why? That would be great for those who are not eating carbohydrates. We should not eat breads and things like that because we don't have the korban mincha. And you know what? We should not eat fruit any longer because we don't have the bikurim. And by the way, we shouldn't drink water any longer because we don't have the nisuch hamayim on Sukkot. The Gemara brings it to this absurdity and realizes you can't do that. So Gemara says, you know what? You can drink water and you can have bread products and you can eat your fruit and you can drink wine and you can have meat. But when you arrange a festive occasion, leave something out. When you build a building, when you do repairs, leave something undone. I can tell you that when anybody does what we call shiputzim, renovations in the apartment, everybody in this country, when you get through with the contractor, there's something undone. So we are machmir, and everybody has a zechel amigdash in the apartment. Something is undone. But we are keenly familiar with this under the chuppah, the breaking of the glass, and the idea that women in some communities don't wear, the kala doesn't wear jewelry, and other such customs under the chuppah and elsewhere, where it's all in the name of Zeichel HaMikdash. That's one sugya. Im eshkachech Yerushalayim, tishkach yimini. But then there's another sugya in Masechet Sukkah that deals with the takana of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, that while in the Torah we are to take the lulav and etrog, adasim and aravot, the arba minim, day one of Sukkot, and that's it. But in Beit HaMikdash, there was a mitzvah to take it for all 7 days. Comes Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai after the destruction, says, you know what? We should all take it for 7 days. Zechel HaMikdash. And the biblical text that's cited as a proof is from Yirmiyahu. Tzion hi doresh ein la. Yerushalayim is sitting there. Nobody's inquiring about its welfare. The Gemara says it's apparent that we should be inquiring about what's happening with Yerushalayim. What's with our future in Yerushalayim? And the way the Rav explained this is that Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai was not giving expression to avelut, mourning over the destruction. That's the first sugya of Imeshkachech Yerushalayim. That's avelut, that's mourning. Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai was teaching us anticipation of what will be. And therefore, we want to keep the machinery oiled up so well that when Beit HaMikdash happens, we will know how to conduct ourselves in the days of Beit HaMikdash. That's a completely different idea. There's no doubt that the type of Zechel HaMikdash that the Rav was talking about, vis-a-vis lighting Hanukkah candles, is of the second nature of Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, of continuity and connecting the second with the third Beit HaMikdash. So what we have is a concept mentioned by the Ramban. The Ramban has a few very important ideas at the beginning of Parshat Bahalotcha. Right now in Shul, every day we're reading a section from the Nasi, from Parshat Naso. And that in itself is interesting because the Medrash tells us that the opening of the Mishkan, the portable sanctuary in the desert, was supposed to occur on the 25th of Kislev, but was postponed for a variety of reasons. That in itself is a shiur. Why was it postponed to the month of Nisan? But the Medrash tells us that the 25th of Kislev was originally ordained to be the target date for the opening up of the Mishkan, which is the portable Beit HaMikdash. And somehow, a makeup in history occurs in the day of Hanukkah, that we do have a Chanukat HaMizbeach and Chanukat HaMishkan, or Mikdash, on the 25th. And because of this connection, we read that section from Parshat Naso, which talks about the opening ceremonies, the opening days and of inauguration of the Mishkan in the desert. At the very end, we finish the parsha, and on the eighth day of Hanukkah, when we read the last days of 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12, we run into, most shuls do this, the first few psukim of Bahalotcha. Bahalotcha tanerot, amul pnei hamnora, ya'iru shivat tanerot. Ramban tells us, based on a medrash, that Aharon HaKohen felt very, very sad that all the tribes, all the Shvatim, were being honored on every single day with offering a very, very nice korban package deal. And it was identical, but each one was doing it with his own heart and his own concentration and focus. And you have all the 12 Shvatim. Now, the Shvatim come in two packages. If Levi is part of the Shvatim, then there's a Shevet Yosef. If Levi is not part of the 12, then Yosef splits into Ephraim and Manasseh. And that's exactly what we have in Parshat Naso. There's a Nasi Levnei Ephraim, and there's a Nasi Levnei Manasseh. So there's no Levi there. And Aaron, representing Shevet Levi, said, this is, you know, it's just not fair to a certain degree. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu basically pacifies him by saying that there's going to be two things that are going to go beyond the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. What these 12 are doing, they're initiating a type of service of God that will exist only in the period when the Beit HaMikdash is functioning. But you, Aharon, representing Shevet Levi, will carry on beyond the days of the destruction. So one of the mitzvot happens to be Birkat Kohanim. Duchening, Birkat Kohanim. Fine, so we have Birkat Kohanim today. In Eretz Yisrael, every single day, in Ashkenazi circles and Chutz La'aretz, just on the Chagim, by Musaf, in a type of nostalgic feeling of coming back, and so on. And that's where you have Birkat Kohanim. But it exists. And then the Ramban says, and the mitzvah of lighting the candles, albeit the mitzvah in the Mikdash was a daily mitzvah, Ramban says, we, Am Yisrael, carry on and light the Hanukkah menorah for every annually for 8 nights, according to the story and according to the institution, thereby continuing somehow the mitzvah of lighting the menorah of the Beit HaMikdash. This is a statement that the Ramban says. And it's very, very interesting because according to this idea, it very much harmonizes with the thought that the entire institution of the lighting of the candles dates back not to the victory, the military victory of the Hashmonaim, but rather the destruction of Beit HaMikdash. And we are carrying on after Churban HaBayit. And to amplify this, a contemporary actually of Rambam, but he never really knew him, Rabbi Zrachia HaLevi from Provence, from southern France, the author of the Ma'or, and he's known as the Baal HaMa'or. He wrote a certain very sharp-worded comments against the Rif of Yitzhak Alfasi. But in this particular case, the Baal HaMa'or is examining the what we say slash sing Hanerot HaLalu immediately after lighting the candles. So what do we say? Hanerot HaLalu Anachnu Madlikim. These are the candles. Why do we light it? Hanerot HaLalu Anachnu Madlikim. Al HaNisim, Val HaNiflaot, Val HaTruot, Val HaNechamot. For all the miracles and so on. Shasita Labotainu Baim Mahem, Vayede Koanecha Kdoshim, Bechol Shmonat Yemei Chanukah, Nerot Halalu Kodesh Hem. And for the entire duration of the Chanukah days, the oil is holy. What does that mean, holy? Vayede Koanecha Kdoshim, Bechol Shmonat Yemei Chanukah, HaNerot Halalu Kodesh Hem. But the object of the oil is holy. If I would cite now a Gemara in Masechet Megillah, Daf Kavav, Amud Bet, the Gemara teaches us that there are two different categories of mitzvot that deal with objects. One is when the object itself is sanctified, enjoys a measure of Kedusha. And if it enjoys a measure of Kedusha, you cannot use it for any profane purpose. It must remain within the framework of the mitzvah. And if it's out of service, it has to be buried, gniza, has to be put in gniza. The class A examples are parchment that have Torah written on it, mezuzah parsha, or tefillin parsha. Those are the class A. But beyond that, the Gemara says that there are also auxiliaries to these mitzvot that also are considered tashmishei kedusha. For example, that which holds the parchment, the handles that hold the parchment of the Sefer Torah, you can't throw it in the garbage if it's broke, for example, if it's worn out, It has to be put in Geniza. You can't use it for a Lag BaOmer bonfire. You can't do that either with it. And tefillin boxes and tefillin straps also are Tashmishe Kedusha, have auxiliary Kedusha. And therefore, if a strap of the tefillin rips, or if the box somehow becomes disqualified, it has to be buried. It's Geniza. It's what we call Seamus, where you put something that has Shem Hashem on it, and so on. That's one category. But then there's another category that the Gemara says there, well, when it's out of service, you can throw in the garbage if you want to. There's no sanctity to it whatsoever. And the examples are a shofar, the schach of the sukkah, tzitzis. I mean, one second, tzitzis. I know that a lot of people won't take tzitzis that rip and throw it in the garbage. But I have news for you. You can. There's no problem. The Gemara says nizrakin. So what we do is, because we're tzaddikim, so we put it in a plastic bag and then we throw it in the garbage. That's what most people do. Because you don't have to have geniza for a rip talus or tefillin. Rip talus or tzitzis. Rip talus or tzitzis does not need geniza. So we treat it almost like we do, and I want to get into the whole subject of fruits with kedushat shviit. Now, how do you do with it when they're rotting? And if you're not doing anything with it, so you put it in a plastic bag, and at one point when it decomposes, so then we dispose of it. And here too, with tzitzis, but with schach of a sukkah, you can throw in the garbage. The city of Yerushalayim collects it right after sukkahs. As simple as that. A broken shofar doesn't need geniza either. These are objects of mitzvah that are named Tashmishe Mitzvah. They're used for the mitzvah purpose. So after Rosh Hashanah, there's no purpose to a shofar. There's no kedusha. No, after Sukkot, there's no kedusha to schach because there's no mitzvah. And if the tzitzis is ripped, so there's no mitzvah with it. If a corner of a garment is ripped off, so the garment doesn't require tzitzis anymore, it has no validity whatsoever in terms of the mitzvah. So this is called Tashmishe Mitzvah. Against this Gemara, if I have a candle that burned for the requisite amount of time, but then some wind blew out the candle, and I have a half an hour's worth of candle left, or for that matter, oil, and then perhaps I even blew it out on my own. Why? Because I was leaving the house after a half an hour, and I didn't want to have the candles burning. I don't have to tell you, I'm sure you all know, some major fires in Jewish homes because of Hanukkah candles. So you don't want to leave it unattended. So you're allowed to blow it out. There's not an issue. If you already fulfilled your mitzvah of the requisite amount of time. Now, can you use that candle the next night? Can you use the oil the next night? The answer is yes, you can use it. But let's assume you have oil and you're making, you're frying latkes. You're frying latkes. So, and you need some more oil. This is very good olive oil. After you've burnt used part of the oil for your Hanukkah candle, you have a few ounces left of olive oil. Can you now use it for schnitzel? That's a simple question. And it seems that if I have to choose between equating it to the straps of tefillin or equating it to schach of a sukkah, I would put it in the category of the schach of the sukkah. It's an object. It doesn't have God's name written on it. It's not related to anything that has God's name written on it. So it shouldn't be Tashmishe Kedusha. It should be Tashmishe Mitzvah. And comes along the author of the Mo'or, Bala Mo'or, and he says, why do we say Hanerot Alalu Kodesh Heim Ve'ein Lanu Rishut Lishtamesh Bahem Ela Lirotam Bilvad? The only usage of this oil is for the purpose of publicizing the miracle, the message of the miracle. You cannot use this oil for any other purpose. So the Bala Mo'or says, you know why? Because this oil is sanctified by virtue of the Nerot, the candles of the Beit HaMikdash. Why, we're almost 2,000 years away from the Beit HaMikdash, and the oil in my Chanukiah here is sanctified by the oil of the Beit HaMikdash candle. That is a phenomenal halachic idea. But it also speaks in terms of connecting the Hanukkah candle with the Beit HaMikdash. And now comes another one, the Ravid, Rabbi Avraham ben David. Rabbi Avraham ben David from Pau Square is also from southern France, and he wrote no small amount of objections to the Rambam's Mishneh Torah. But in this particular sighting, it's not an objection to the Rambam at all. He's dealing with an issue of the nusach, how we make a bracha on a mitzvah. Now, all the Daf Yomi people out there, and Rabbi Kelman gives you the synopsis, a weekly synopsis here and there of some of the salient features of some of Daf Yomi. So I believe it's on Daf Zion where the Gemara talks about Habodek Tzarich Shiyavarech. When you do Bedikat Chametz, you have to say a bracha, and all of a sudden becomes a discussion. What's the bracha? Vitzivanu al biur chametz or vitzivanu leva'er chametz? Well, there are two ways to doing it. The al biur chametz, not bidikat chametz, it's al biur chametz or leva'er chametz. Is it la'asot, to do the mitzvah, or is it on the mitzvah? And the Gemara seems to suggest that if you use the lamed form, la'asot, to do something, you're saying that bracha immediately prior to the performance, what's known as over la'asiyatan, and that's really the best way of doing things. But if for whatever reason you're making the bracha post facto, you've already done the mitzvah, and now you're making the bracha, so then you cannot say la'asot if you've done it already, so then you simply say al, on the mitzvah. I'll give you a good example. Washing hands, litilat yadayim. So we say the bracha essentially after we wash. I'm familiar with the idea that when you dry your hands, it's part of the mitzvah. But that was already just an add-on. The idea is that we say the bracha after nitilat yadayim. And that's why the bracha is al nitilat yadayim and not litol yadayim. That's the reason. That's the reason. So, for example, other mitzvot that have... with a lamed and some have with the al, and the Gemara tries to give us criteria, and the Gemara has too many exceptions to the criteria, and then the great Rishonim join in and weigh in on this question, and they all suggest what they suggest, but it brought the author of the Tosfot, one of the Balei HaTosfot, to say, he threw his hands up and he says, there are really no criteria, I don't have it, I don't get it, and I don't understand why sometimes it's this and sometimes it's that. But nevertheless, there's such a discussion. Having said this, says the Ravid, the Rambam seems to suggest that if it's a rabbinic mitzvah, it should use the form al and not lamed. Because if it's a rabbinic mitzvah, then the Torah didn't command it. It cannot say vitzivanu to do something. Tfilin, the Kadosh Baruch Hu commanded. So you can say lehaniach tfilin. Tzitzis, a Kadosh Baruch Hu commanded. You can say vitzivanu litatev batzitzit. But Kadosh Baruch Hu didn't command Hanukkah candles. So how can you say lahadlik ner? That's exactly what we do. We say lahadlik ner shel Hanukkah. It should be al hadlakat ner Hanukkah. So the rabbi says, you know why it's lahadlik? Because the nerot of Hanukkah emanate from the nerot of the Beit HaMikdash, and therefore they carry with it the design of a biblical mitzvah. Ke'ein de'oraita. That is a phenomenal idea as well. That we consider it as if, in modern Hebrew, all our teenagers know this because it's 50% of their language, ke'ilu, ke'ilu, ke'ilu. Everything is ke'ilu, as if, as if, as if. It's ke'ilu, it's as if it's a biblical mitzvah. And I know you're going to ask me now about Shabbat because we say l'hadlik ner shel Shabbat as well, and not al hadlakat nerot Shabbat. So each individual case that has an exception deserves attention. But the Ravid, Rabbi Abraham ben David, is suggesting that the reason that the nusach of the bracha is v'tzivanu lehadlik ner shel Chanukah and not al hadlakat nerot Chanukah is because the mitzvah was designed to be an extension, a spiritual extension of the candles of the Beit HaMikdash. Furthermore, the Gemara in Masechet Shabbat carries with it a discussion about where is the precise moment that you fulfill the mitzvah. Is it the act of lighting the candle or the act of placing the candle in the public view? So we know that there are two aspects to the mitzvah of Hanukkah candles. One is the act of lighting, and one is persumanes, the publicizing of the miracle. And they go hand in hand to a large degree. We have two different brachot, Ladik Ner Shel Chanukah, and Shasani Sim Lavoteinu, Bayamim Mahem Bazman Hazeh. Now, the question is, if you would stand inside your house and hold the Chanukiah, hold your menorah, light it, correctly, light it correctly, and then you carry it outside to the door or carry it next to the window and place it down where you'd like the public, where you want it to be on public view. Did you fulfill the mitzvah? That is called hanacha osa mitzvah. The placing of it is where the mitzvah is full, is finally accomplished, or is the mitzvah accomplished simply by lighting it? So if I lit inside, that's also okay. The fact that I'm going to carry the menorah and out outside or by the window, that's like a part two. It's an add-on. But the principal mitzvah was the act of the lighting. So this is a discussion in the Gemara. Hadlaka osa mitzvah or hanacha osa mitzvah? Is the lighting the principal mitzvah, or is the placing of the menorah in public view the principal mitzvah? So the Rav said, why would anybody entertained the thought that hanacha osa mitzvah, the placing of it? Why would anybody think of it? And the answer is because in Beit HaMikdash it works. The Rambam tells us that if for whatever reason, this is completely theoretical, for whatever reason, the menorah was taken out of the Beit HaMikdash into the yard, the chatzer of the Beit HaMikdash, and in the yard of the Beit HaMikdash, the Kohanim would light the menorah. And then as a lit menorah, the menorah is now carried back into the Beit HaMikdash and placed on the southern wall where it belongs. You, the Kohanim, fulfilled their obligation of lighting the menorah that day. Which means that even though the Torah always talks about to light, Ya'ir b'halotcha tanirot, Ya'ir p'nei amnirah, and so on, fine. But the halakha says that what's paramount with regard to the menorah in the Beit HaMikdash is it's being lit in its proper place. And hence, in this very weird scenario of having taken the menorah outdoors, lighting it, and then bringing it back indoors and placing it in its proper place, that is a halakha that is a part and parcel of the halakha of the menorah in Beit HaMikdash. The Rambam says this very openly. So the Gemara wants to entertain the notion. If it's okay for Beit HaMikdash, should it be okay for Hanukkah candles as well? That is the basis of the discussion, Hanacha Osa Mitzvah, or what was done in Beit HaMikdash was done in Beit HaMikdash, except that in the case of Hanukkah, Chachamim, our sages, wanted that you should light in the very place that people can see that these lights are going up and being ignited. So the halakha, by the way, is hadlaka osa mitzvah. It's you have to light in the proper place where you're going to exhibit the candles. But the very, very, very fact that the Gemara discusses the possibility, what's known in Gemara language as the hava amina, the thought, maybe, where's that come from? The Rav said it comes from Beit HaMikdash. Then there's a custom. A custom that's brought down by the Chayei Adam. The Chayei Adam, his name was Rabbi Avram Danzig, and he lived about 300 years ago in Europe. And he brings the custom of lighting candles in Beit Knesset, in shul. Now, what is done in most Ashkenazi shuls, I believe in the Sephardi shuls, I know here in Eretz Yisrael, even in the Sephardi shuls, that they light the candles between Mincha and Ma'ariv in the evening hours, of course, and they make a bracha. This is a discussion that is kicked around by many of the poskim. Should a bracha be made on the lighting of the candles in the Beit Knesset? So first of all, whoever said you have to light candles in a shul? The Gemara talks about Ner Ish Uveito. The whole institution of Ner Chanukah is for the home, for the family. And that's what Uveito means. So originally it was one candle per night, and that was it. All you needed was 8 candles and you fulfilled the mitzvah. And then came the Mahadrin and the Mahadrin Mina Mahadrin that we should take into consideration the number of members of the family. We should take into consideration the day of Hanukkah, whether you do it according to Beit Shammai or Beit Hillel, and the numbers start expanding to a box of 44 candles with the Shamas, the Seder. We originally all you needed was 8 candles for the entire Chag. But nevertheless, it has to do with the home. No posek in his right mind will ever tell people in shul by watching, by looking and hearing the brachot of a shamus, a gabbai, or anybody who's lighting candles in shul, that you're exempt from lighting candles at home because you had it. It's not like Havdalah on Motzei Shabbat. If the gabbai or shamus or rabbi or somebody makes Havdalah Motzei Shabbat and has in mind to be Moitzi, so everybody who listens fulfills their obligation, so technically they don't have to make Havdalah at home if nobody at home has to hear Havdalah. So, okay, that's known. And originally there was such a minute with Kiddush also. So it's, but Hanukkah candles is not like that. Hanukkah candles, the lighting in the Beit Knesset has nothing to do with the institution of Chazal that we should light Hanukkah candles at home. So why do it? And why make a bracha? So most of the poskim say, we make the bracha because of Pirsum Hanes, where it's a big crowd and we're advertising the miracle. Whoever said you're supposed to make a bracha? If I put a sign up in front of my house, Happy Hanukkah, right? And I even have a pictorial description of what happened in the days of Hashmonaim. Do I make a bracha? Of course not. Is that called Pirsum Hanes? Marginally. The Pirsum Hanes, the way Chachamim understood it, is through the vehicle of the candles in its proper place. So those poskim who suggest that it's done for Pirsum Hanes, okay, I accept it, I can buy it, but it led to an interesting conclusion. Many of us attend, now perhaps not in the days of coronavirus, and God willing, next year it'll be very, very different. But many of us on Hanukkah have events, have get-togethers, family get-togethers, communal get-togethers, weddings. And I remember whenever we had the community get-togethers on the night of Hanukkah, it always begins with candle lighting. Last night in my shul in Ol Nechama, we had a cantorial concert. A concert, a chazonish concert in a big shul with no crowd, no audience. Where was the audience? Audience was on YouTube, on Facebook. You can go into it. On YouTube, you can see the whole concert. We began with candle lighting. And I told the director of the choir, 1 second. You want this chazan to make a bracha on the candles? I'm not sure we can do that. Why? The Rav explained that the entire idea of candles in shul has to do with Zecher LeMikdash. Because the shul has a status of a Mikdash Ma'at, a miniature Beit HaMikdash, the Zecher LeMikdash is to light the candles in the shul, specifically in the shul. Now, a shul is just a hall with walls, with furniture, with Sfarim, with Sefer Torah, with Aron Kodesh, that's not good enough. Beit HaMikdash was a communal affair. Beit HaMikdash was not something where an individual Jew could say, I have more shares in Beit HaMikdash than anyone else. The whole reason that all of the corporate korbanot, sacrificial activity, was financed by the half shekel, the uniform half shekel donation annually between Rosh Chodesh Adar and Rosh Chodesh Nisan, was to guarantee that everybody understands that every single Korban Tamid of the morning and afternoon, and every single Korban Musaf on a special occasion, and every single aspect of the Avodah of Yom Kippurim, and it had to be financed. It was financed equally by every single Jew. And the Torah says, He'ashir lo yarbeh, V'hadal lo yamit mimachzit ha-shakel in Parshat Ki Tisah. The rich shall give no more and the poor will give no less. The poor will give no less. It was an affordable contribution. Rav Avad Yosef Zichron Levracha calculated that the half shekel of the Torah has the buying power, or had the buying power, of 6 Israeli shekel today. And I got news for you. If I gave my grandchildren 6 shekel today, I don't think they would appreciate it as a birthday gift. It doesn't fly. I mean, we were handing out bills of 20 shekel to all of them. 6 shekel, you know, you get a bubble gum and a half, you know, for 6 shekel. Not a big deal today. And that was the half a shekel. So why did the Torah give such a minimal amount? Because hadal lo yamid, no excuses. Everybody can afford this contribution. And nobody's going to say, well, I'm going to give a 500,000 shekel. and will have my name on the corner of the Mizbeach. No way, no way. This Korban Musaf, this Rosh Chodesh, tomorrow's Rosh Chodesh, is dedicated by so-and-so in honor of, in memory of. No way. It didn't work like that. Every single Jew had to give a uniform amount, which means Beit HaMikdash was a totality of Klal Yisrael experience. And the Rav said, what makes the sanctity of a Beit Knesset into a Mikdash Me'at is the sense of totality of Klal Yisrael. And the only way that's accomplished is by having a minyan get together, and not just 10 people getting together in shul. That's still not a minyan. You have to have 10 people getting together for the purpose of fulfilling something that the halakha calls a davar shebikdusha, that requires 10 people. If you don't have that, if you just have 10 people standing around in a room, that's not a minyan. But 10 people standing around in a room, and in 5 minutes they're davening mincha, that's a minyan. Or in 5 minutes they're davening ma'ariv, that's a minyan. And the Rav said, that's why, while most of Am Yisrael light candles, Hanukkah candles, after people come back from shul after ma'ariv, and it's already nighttime, Seta Kochavim, the stars have appeared, in shul, we always light the candles before Ma'ariv. And it's not because the way some of the Balabatim think, well, you're going to light just for the empty walls when people are leaving the shul, why bother lighting? You know, chaval on the oil. So let's, you know, get in a little bit during Ma'ariv. The Rav said that's not what it is. It's because before Ma'ariv, the 10 people there, or 10 plus people, have a status of Klal Yisrael. They represent all of Klal Yisrael because they're going to do something of a Davar Shebikdusha, and hence the Beit HaKnesset is elevated to Mikdash Ma'at. This is where the Zecher LeMikdash in the Beit Knesset on Hanukkah takes place. This is where it happens. And we have a problem, by the way, on Motzei Shabbat, because on Motzei Shabbat, you cannot light before Ma'ariv because it's still Shabbat. So when do we do it? So we try to get it in even after Shmon Esrei of Ma'ariv on Hanukkah, Shabbos Hanukkah, where there's still something to be said that you need a minyan, like a Kaddish. So the Rav suggested that we should light candles before Ve'ata Kadosh Yoshev Tilot Yisrael, because you're going to have to say a Kaddish with Titkabel, and certainly before Aleinu, there should be a Kaddish afterwards. There has to be something that there's going to be a necessity of a minyan, and then you can still have the Zechel and Migdash of the Migdash Ma'at, the miniature Beit HaKnesset, Beit HaMikdash, being an extension of the real Beit HaMikdash. And this is very, very important. Furthermore, there's also a strong minhag to come to shul in the morning for Shacharit and relight the Hanukkah menorah in shul. Now, we don't do that at home. There's no such animal as lighting the Hanukkah menorah at home in the morning. So why relight it in the morning? Albeit without a bracha, according to everybody. Nobody makes a bracha on the Hanukkah candles in shul in the morning. But why bother altogether? Is because there's a dispute between the Rambam and others whether the menorah in the Beit HaMikdash was relit. The Rambam was of the opinion that the menorah in the Beit HaMikdash was relit in the morning. The whole question, what does it mean, hatavat hanirot, the shear in itself? But the Rambam believes that hatavat hanirot includes lighting the candles, and the nerot of the candles of the Beit HaMikdash were relit in the morning, and therefore, as a reference to the Rambam's view that there was also candle lighting in the Beit HaMikdash in the morning, so we relight the menorah in the Beit HaKnesset in the morning as well. Having said this, so we're now engaged in a very unusual situation for those communities who do not yet have opportunities to daven indoors. I must say, I enjoyed very much 3 weeks ago getting the WhatsApp of the minyan in Thornhill in Canada, of the mincha with the feet in the snow. I thought that was very, very nice and deserved a big yasher koyach. For those, I hope everybody is still healthy as they davened mincha in the snow. Here in Eretz Yisrael, the rules are, when I say the rules, doesn't mean this is what everybody does, but the rules are that 10 people can be inside the shul. Any other noch schleppers have to be outside the shul. We try to be very careful at Ol Nechama. I can tell you for the weekday minyan, we really count the heads, and there's 10, and we have arrangements in other parts of the building for the stragglers who are not part of the original 10. Shabbos presents a little bit more of a problem because you can't run a Shabbos minyan with 10 people, but we're not going terribly overboard. And as I remind people, when the police go to Har HaBayit and stop the 7,000 Palestinians who are praying on Friday, you know, one next to the other, then they can come to me and tell me they have a problem with 13 men in my shul. But I'm not, you know, belittling the fact that we have rules. And the rules are, no doubt, very important. And we try very, very hard to adhere to the rules. But there are many, many minyanim that are still outdoors, in the backyards, in the parking lots, and so on. And my daily Mincha Ma'ariv is outdoors. The question is, what about lighting Hanukkah candles in these outdoor minyanim? This question is a real question for many, many communities. People are davening Mincha Ma'ariv outdoors, and they remember that back in the, you know, in the years of old, we used to daven in a shul. And in the shul, we would light Hanukkah candles before Ma'ariv. So do we light Hanukkah candles outdoors at these outdoor Mincha Ma'ariv minyanim? My great Rebbe Rav Heschel Schechter wrote a tshuva about this. He sent it to the RCA and the OU and YU. They publicized it. And he was very, very adamant. And I will just say that one of the great poskim in Yerushalayim, Rav Usha Weiss, agrees 100% what I'm going to say now, 100%, in that whereas the original minhag was Beit HaKnesset, the way we're explaining it as being an extension of Beit HaMikdash, this does not apply to an outdoor minyan. Outdoor minyan is important if you can't have an inside. So you're creating the minyan outdoors. We have a lot of experience with outdoor minyanim before Corona. When on, you know, Chol HaMoed or vacation time in the summer, you go to national parks and you take a tiul, you take a trip with your kids and everything. I've rarely had a situation where I got stuck without a mincha minyan out in the boondocks in Israel. All you got to do is yell mincha, and all of a sudden, 9 other people are just going to show up from all sides. That's the way it works here. So we have experience davening outside. But this is not called tefillah bebeit haKnesset. It's not davening a shul. It's davening outdoors with a minyan. So Rav Schechter writes that in the scenario of having an outdoor minyan, you actually don't have to light, no obligation according to the minhag, according to the custom, to light whatsoever. But if for whatever reason you want to light, it should be done for sure without a bracha. Because the bracha, how can we make a bracha on a minhag, on a custom? The answer is that Ashkenazim have gotten used to making brachot on a minhag. Tomorrow morning is Rosh Chodesh, and Ashkenazim and Sfaradim say abbreviated halil, except that tomorrow is an exception, because it happens to be Chanukah, so we're saying the full halil anyway, because it's Chanukah, but on another day, Rosh Chodesh, another month, Rosh Chodesh, we say the abbreviated halil. According to the Rambam, and this is Sephardi tradition in most communities of Sephardim, there's no bracha, because the Rambam says you don't make a bracha on a custom, because it's only a custom to say halil on Rosh Chodesh. But Ashkenazim, based on Rashi's grandson, Rabbeinu Tam, who says that even on customs, we can make a bracha. And hence Ashkenazim make the bracha on halil on Rosh Chodesh, even though it's only a custom. And on this basis, many, many of the poskim said that lighting the Chanukah menorah in shul is a minhag, is a custom, yet we're allowed to make the bracha on a custom. That's okay. But outside the shul, that's not the custom. And therefore, it would be very problematic to have a bracha. So too with regard to misibot, gatherings, get-togethers, parties, weddings during Chanukah. And people want to begin the festivities, you know, with candle lighting, like the concert last night in my shul. So I was thoroughly relieved to hear from the choir director that right after the concert, they're going to daven Ma'ariv. I said, wonderful. If you're going to daven Ma'ariv right after the concert, you can begin the concert with the Chanukah candles with a bracha. I was very relieved because I knew the Chazan was, you know, gorgling away, practicing his bracha, and I didn't want him to do Baruch Atah Hashem. If you're going to make a bracha already, make it right. But this is a live broadcast, and we have Busha, you know. So I told the choir leader, I said, if you weren't going to tell me that, I was going to tell you something else, that because you're singing Pirkei Halel, we're going to say a Kaddish after the concert. And because you need a minion for the Kaddish, so we're going to allow the bracha for the candles. But we didn't have to get to that because they dab Marav right after the concert. But with regard to other parties, so there's a split decision on this. There are some poskim who say, yeah, it shouldn't be done with a bracha, but if they make a bracha, you know, yesh al mi lismoch, you can rely on those who think that you can, because they are basing themselves on the idea that the only reason we're lighting candles in shul is because of Pirsum HaNes publicizing the miracle. And here at the wedding and here at a party at this misibah, we're doing the same thing, no less, and therefore we can have the bracha. And others who understood it like the way the Rav understood it, and Rav Hesher Shechter and Rav Moshe Weiss, that we're dealing with a Zecher LeMikdash, that doesn't apply to a catering hall, doesn't apply to a home party or a social hall. It does not apply at all. So if you want to light candles, you can light candles. Again, there's a Mara D'Atra here. We have to be careful. But I'm just giving my point of view, okay? I'm not here not wearing a hat of a posek, just giving the views out there. But all views are kosher, all right? But so according to that view, there's a little bit of a problem. I recall back in 1981 when I began my tenure as the rabbi of the Young Israel of Be'er Sheva. Right, there is such a thing as the Young Israel of Be'er Sheva. So the shul made an installation for my coming. My wife once told me installations are for refrigerators and air conditioners. You have an installation, you know, but rabbis don't have installations. Here in Israel, they're actually called hachtara. Hachtara means coronation, but in the age of Corona, I don't think anybody wants a coronation. We had this tekes, very nice ceremony in a hotel, very nice. And the people in the shul, they wanted to begin with Hadlakat Nerot Chanukah. It was on Chanukah. And truth is, I had my objections. The chief rabbi of Be'er Sheva was in attendance, and he said that he has a long-standing minhag that at the misibot, you know, they can make a bracha. And I had to make a quick judgment. If this would have been in my own shul, I would have put my foot down, because in your own shul, you have jurisdiction. You're the Mara D'Atra. But if you're outside your shul and you're in a city hotel and the city rabbi is there, the Rav Eir, and expresses an opinion, so I decided to bow to his opinion and I let it go. But I remember dealing with it back in 1981 when I began my tenure at Young Israel Be'er Sheva. This whole idea of lighting and connecting to Beit HaMikdash very much is in the spirit of the Haftarah that we just read 3 days ago on Shabbat Chanukah. It's also the Haftarah for Parshat Bahalotcha, Roni V'Simchi Batzion. It deals with the vision of the menorah kula zahav, the golden menorah, shiva neroteha, and it has olive branches on its side. If you are familiar with the symbol of the state of Israel, it was lifted out of this particular image of Nerot Zechariah from Sefer Zechariah Perek Dalet. There was a contest here in Israel. You can read all about it in volume 5 of Rav Professor Daniel Sperver's Minhag Yisrael, which is dedicated only to the subject of Hanukkah. And there he shows all the candidate pictures, and the one that ultimately wins, you're all very familiar with. It's this menorah with the olive branches on the side and so on. The Medrash tells us that the 7 branches represent different subjects of wisdom. And the Ner Emtsa'i, the Ner Ma'aravi, is actually Torah. And all of the other subjects of knowledge bend and focus into Torah. They emanate from Torah as well. There's legitimacy in all the various disciplines of thought. That's one way of looking at it. But perhaps to make it a little bit more, in Hebrew we say aktuali, relevant today. So Israel is a very political country. And I'm not here to tell you or tell anybody how to vote in the next election. We seem to be in love with elections, and we do it several times during the year. The menorah represents the right wingers and the extreme right wingers who are moderate, centrist, left wingers who are moderate, and left who are extreme. You have it all there. But let's remember that the menorah was made from one piece of gold and it was chiseled out. Miksha taseh. And Moshe Rabbeinu had great difficulty somehow taking that idea and matching it with reality. So it's a great idea that we all come from one source and we branch out to different ideas. To Moshe Rabbeinu, that was a king-size headache. And he didn't understand how it can function. And he couldn't make the menorah, say Chazal. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, take the piece of gold and throw it into the fire. And the menorah will come out automatically, designed by itself. Naset me'eleha. Miksha te'aseh et ha'menorah. And I believe what Chazal was saying is when Am Yisrael goes through a period of fire, of difficulties, of pressure, then, and unfortunately only then, the achdut, the unity, then becomes readily apparent. Our great challenge is to have that type of unity when there's no fire, when Baruch Hashem things are calm and things are peaceful and things are not crisis moments. We should have a great zchut that with our lighting of the Hanukkah candles, we should bring each and every one of us personally and collectively for Klal Yisrael to the level of Malim Bakodesh Velo Moridin. Chag Sameach to all of you.
Thank you very much, and thank you for that beautiful ending.